B-Pod Studios.
It's coming up on 4:04 in the afternoon. Felger and Maz on an agenda-free Friday, brought to you by the Bernardi Auto Group. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life, BernardiAutoGroup.com. Felger here on location. Big Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy back in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Agenda-free, everything from the week we've gotten to or have yet to get to. And Jim Murray came in today with a cause. And his cause, if you can believe it, is Daniel Snyder. Explain, Murray.
Yeah, no, I've been put in the uncomfortable position of actually having to defend that a-hole, because he is a reprehensible a-hole overall, and he is. But that Washington Post story drops late yesterday, and it's terrible. The level of harassment that those women had to deal with in that work environment is awful. And those that were named and held responsible, they all had to go, and thankfully they're out, and they should rightfully be shamed. But Dan Snyder, as the owner of the team, reading that thing, to me, the one thing he's truly guilty of is having an understaffed human resources department, and that's it. And so that's being used as the one fact in the story against Dan Snyder, as to why he's got to go as the owner of the team. Like, I get it. Like, if you're a fan of that team, you've wanted him out for years for a whole list of things. But based on this story, it's more feelings than facts to me, and that's where people lose me. I get it. Like, there's now an ethical debate as to whether Dan Snyder should or shouldn't be forced to sell the team. But it's ultimately up to the other 31 owners. And so if I'm an owner voting on this, I think it sets a pretty risky precedent that you could be forced to sell your franchise for a lot of reasons that are out of your control. I get that he's an a-hole. I get it. And ultimately, yes, he's responsible for that HR department. But I don't see things that are as hard fact as there were against, like, Jerry Richardson, former owner of the Panthers, that had him going, rightfully so. And the same with Donald Sterling, who used to own the Clippers. If you had that, yeah, all right, go. You got to go. But for me, especially by the, you know, you keep saying the woke media, and I definitely get my backup about them. It's like, oh, no, this is the last straw. Now he's got to go. And it's like, no, this is more feelings than facts. And look, I hate being put in the position to defend this guy, but with what's out there right now, I don't think you got enough. Sorry, not sorry.
What do you think, McCarthy?
I think he's bad for business. I'm more with you, Mike. And listen, Jim, I understand where you're coming from on this. This is not a, well, there's a tape of Donald Sterling, right? Or, you know, there are direct allegations tied to Jerry Richardson. That's where this differs from some of the other situations that we've seen with these league owners. But if I'm another NFL owner, I'm looking at Daniel Snyder and I'm saying, this guy's bad for business. And at what point, you know, maybe it isn't this report, but at what point does something even worse come out? And this report is already horrible enough, whether or not it directly ties him, you know, to any of these situations. They need to think about protecting the shield. We always hear about this, right? You protect the shield. And it's up to them at this point to force him out because he is bad for the league. Not directly because of this, but because of the last 20 years and every single problem that you have with this franchise, whether it's that horrible story about the cheerleaders or the racist nickname or the Trent Williams thing from last year or this, it's the magnitude of crap that has piled up on Dan Snyder that he has brought upon himself because he is a raging a-hole. That's why he needs to go.
How about pimping out the cheerleaders?
Well, I just mentioned that.
I thought, start listening. Oh, I'm sorry. I was listening. I thought you left it off. I thought you left it off your list. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it was on my list, Mike.
Okay, sorry. So, like, to me, it's the track record. To me, it's the track record. And, Murray, you're right. I'm not first of all, I'm not in charge of anything. We're not in charge of anything. So it's not like, you know, because he's an unpopular owner or the woke media doesn't like him, that's not the calculus. And it's not like the law or the government's coming after him. The law and government, I'll just say it again, has protected his team name. So when people get all bent out of shape about, you know, the liberal this, the liberal that, going after the Redskins name, that the Supreme Court and the government has protected his name. He is legally has the right to use that name. This is actually the free enterprise at work. That was his sponsors saying, no, we don't want to be associated with this anymore. So that's not the woke media. That's not the government. That's not liberal judges. That's business. No, that's the free market saying this is now bad for business. We want you to disassociate that name. And so that just ties into the calculus is the 31 other owners. Again, the 31 other owners, that's a private club. That is not, he does not have rights of a citizen. He does not have the rights of someone under arrest. That is a private club. And if there's a 32-member private club and 31 of the members want to kick out somebody, they get to kick him out. And that's sort of the deal. And I know, again, there are rules against that, but I'm just talking broadly speaking. And I do tie that into the Donald Sterling thing with the L.A. Clippers. And that was, you know, when the tapes first came out of Donald Sterling, a lot of people said, well, they can't fire him for that. They can't get rid of him for that. That opens up a horrible precedent. Someone tapes you surreptitiously and gets a tape of you saying something in private, and now you lose your team. No owner's going to sign off on that, because then everyone's going to be trying to recording each other. And there was a ton of people who circled the wagons around Donald Sterling and said they can't oust him for that. And the next thing you know, they ousted him because they didn't want him in the club anymore. Because he was a horrible owner that was dragging down an important franchise, had pretty much done nothing right for the 20, 30 years he had owned that franchise, and the owners used that event as an excuse to say, goodbye, you're bringing us down.
Yeah, but that
by
was,
owning that.
You know, once you hear, like, that was something we could audibly hear. Mm-hmm. Like, that finally proved it. Because otherwise it was just, you hear this, and it's stories, and these things. And you know, it ultimately proved he was a bad guy. And, you know, we're pretty much there with Dan Snyder. It's just that, you know, again, this story's terrible, but nothing really truly, there's no hard fact that ties him to what was going
okay,
on.
Okay, but yeah, but it's the same principle, Murray. It's the same principle. And that is, Dan Snyder, I said this earlier, in the 20 years he's owned the team, pretty much every bit of news coming out of that team for the last 20 years has been bad. They had a little bit of success with Robert Griffin, and like that, they were a positive little thing there, but they even screwed that up when their team doctor misdiagnosed him and sent him back out on the field before he was ready. It's like, it's been one thing after the next. This owner has driven one of the most valuable, profitable, powerful brands in all of sports into the ground. The Redskins were as popular a team as any mm-hmm. team in pro sports.
Oh, I remember.
We've talked about this too. Now they're a franchise that if you go to their games, there's more opposing fans than Redskins fans. They've become that. So this guy has, you know, really hurt the brand of not just that team, but that league. He's hurt their earning power. He's hurt their business. He's done it for 20 straight years. And so if I'm an NFL owner, I use this as an excuse to say, enough's enough. Enough's enough, pal. And I absolutely push him out because he's bad for the league.
Am I doing
this on its own? This singularly? No, this isn't enough. I agree.
Okay, yeah. If you're looking at the grand scheme of things, then okay. Yeah, you know, you got a strong case. I do wonder, though, if you ask Jerry Jones, you know, under some Johnny Blue, and any of the other owners in the NFC East, John Mara with the Giants, you think he's bad for business? They'd be like, no, he's good for business. We never have to worry about that team.
Well, I mean, I guess there's that, but I mean, I think they look at it differently, Murray. I think they look at revenue, you know, brand.
Right.
You know, who represents your brand and what's good for business and what's bad for business. And, you know, Dan Snyder may be a punching bag, but I think the league's a stronger league with a stronger Washington franchise. And Dan Snyder's made it one of the weakest, worst franchises in all of sports. So, like, I mean, I'm looking to get rid of him in the first place. Never mind this stuff. Never mind the fact that he's a racist and now a sexist and all these other problems that he's had. And I think the reporting was just the tip of the iceberg. Don't you think, Murray, that all that stuff we were reading online the last couple of days, don't you think at least half of it is true?
Oh, the speculation stuff that we had before the story dropped?
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. I mean, I still think these minority owners fleeing and jumping ship, I wonder if this story is enough to get them to jump ship, because the story was bad, and it's, you know, you can't run a business like this anymore, and there was definitely sexual harassment. Like, I'm not downplaying what happened there, but there was nothing, you know, egregious. Like we all sort of agree that what was contained in this story in and of itself is not enough to force out Dan Snyder. And I don't think it would be in and of itself enough to get a minority owner to say, I don't want to be associated with that. There's got to be more that they were either to you know, able to bury, or the post wasn't able to quite, you know, didn't have the guts to run with, or
his lawyers, you know, his lawyers did their job. So that's, I guess that's ultimately what I get my backup about is like, okay, you look at the history of this guy. I get it. You got a case and he should go. But just, I've read today in a few places, like the stories of like, nope, this is it now. This is the one, this story. And it's like, no, I don't think so. I don't think you have a hard fact based on this story that's like, no, this is the smoking gun. Like, I'm sorry, I don't think
so. So Murray, I mentioned this earlier, but I know your issue. You hate the woke media, and so you are just you will take any opportunity to take the other side because you hate them. And I don't blame you. I don't blame you. And like the woke media doesn't understand that they do more harm than good. For example, I think, Murray, that if it weren't for the woke media, and you know the preachers online that you deal with, you would say, yeah, get rid of Dan Snyder. But you feel like defending Dan Snyder because you hate the Nanas so much that you just want to take that side. And I think there's a lot of people like you that those people are so insufferable. The woke media is so insufferable that it turns the other side. It's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about is someone who wants Biden to win and all of this. I worry about backlash from that side going too far.
Oh, I readily admit I'm like John Rambo in First Blood. You drew First Blood, not me. Like that's you've pushed me to this. You've done this, not me. You've pushed me to this.
So the woke media has pushed Jim Murray to take up the cause for Dan Snyder.
This is what it's become.
That's your fault. Yeah. That is your fault. That is not his fault. That is your fault.
Yeah, so I said, it's the most 2020 thing ever. When I started off with this at 2 o'clock, just proves worse by the day, never getting out of it. You've actually forced me into a position of having to try to defend Dan Snyder, who's a puke.
Who is indefensible. Okay, your thoughts right after this.
Boston's home for sports. Failure and Mads. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger Mass.
Okay, when you call and say two things, three things, you're going to have to wait for me to reach for a pen.
Number one.
And then I'm going to have to write it down.
Because they know how to build winning relationships.
I, for one, am not smart enough to keep two or three things in my head.
Felger Mass.
So we prefer just a single thought.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
There have been consequences for the individuals who were accused of wrongdoing. You can reasonably conclude that whatever investigation the team did allowed it to conclude that the individuals were responsible for the things they were accused of doing. But no accusations against Snyder, no accusations against Bruce Allen, the longtime president of the team, which makes this situation different for Snyder than it was in Carolina several years ago for Jerry Richardson, when the founder of the team had to abruptly sell the team after it came out that there were multiple non-disclosure agreements based upon allegations of misconduct, all of which trace back to him. In this case, there's nothing tracing back specifically to Snyder. But the problem is this. Everything traces back to Snyder generally. He's not an absentee landlord like other owners who live in one city and own a team in a different city. He's there. He's present. This is his culture. This is his organization. He's been the owner for 21 years. If he's not aware of the things that are happening under his watch, then he's clueless. And see, in order to avoid significant scrutiny from the league office or his business partners who own the other 31 franchises, Snyder essentially has to characterize himself as being completely and totally clueless as to the things happening in his building. And that's going to be hard to pull off.
So that's Mike Florio's take on the situation. And he raises an interesting point. Dan Snyder is going to be held responsible for the actions of his employees and the culture in his organization. Now, was that culture so bad that he has to renounce the team? You know, I'm sort of with Murray. Singularly in a vacuum? You know, probably not. But the bigger point is this. If the other owners want you out, you're out. That's it. And there doesn't need to be a rule. There doesn't need to be a basis.
There is some sort of clause, though, in the NFL bylaws that does give them the out to push someone out. I was reading about that today. I forget what the number is in the rule book, but there is something that will allow them to push someone out.
Okay, so whether there's a rule or not, or whether Daniel Snyder even qualifies for it, like Donald Sterling, I remember at the time when it broke, you know, again, there was a lot. It was weird how people defended Sterling and his right to maintain control of the team. And I felt like that fell on political lines too for some reason, if I remember. And it's like, you guys don't get it. If a group of owners in a private business don't want you, they're going to find a way to get you out, whether there's a rule for it or not. You know, and they can make Daniel Snyder's life so miserable, whether they keep him in or not, that he's going to his only recourse is going to be to sell. I mean, that's what I think ultimately they did with Sterling. I don't know if there was even a – I can't remember. Was there a ruling, or did he just, you know, ultimately back down and say, I'm out?
Didn't Adam Silver ban him for life?
Did he?
Before the sale of the team, wasn't there that remarkable press conference? And Silver had just taken over from David Stern, and he came out and said, we've banned Donald Sterling for life.
But did that mean he had to sell the team?
It was before he sold the team, because essentially then they forced him to sell the team after that. I'm fairly certain that happened.
Yeah, so it says, announced Sterling had been banned from the league for life, fined $2.5 million. Silver stripped Sterling of virtually all of his authority over the Clippers and banned him from entering any Clippers facility. So, yeah, no, they gutted him.
But they didn't take away ownership, right? You can't take away ownership. All they said was, you don't have a seat on the board.
Yeah.
You don't have a vote anymore. I guess that's what that means. You're going to be fine. You know, you can't go in your we're not going to allow you. They have the right to say, you're not allowed on premises. You're no longer on the board. We can't force you to, and like all those things forced him to sell. I guess, you know, we're just putting this together in real time. All I'm telling you is, in business, there's a million ways to get someone out, and you can just make it untenable for them. So whether there's a rule or not, or a regulation or not, whether there's a league bylaw or not, if those NFL owners determine enough's enough, this guy's bad for us, they'll find a way to force him out. And if I were one of those NFL owners, that's what I would do. That's what I would do. I would force him out because he brings nothing but bad news. Nothing but bad news for the league. Mike and Nashua, your thoughts on this story?
Yeah, so, I'm a Knicks fan, and I draw a lot of parallels with Dolan. I mean, same thing, you know, running the franchise into the ground. They had the sexual harassment charges. Why has he still got to be an owner? And isn't it similar to what happened with Cuban and the Mavericks? But he came up and said, you know, he was very upfront about, I got to fix this. And
And it's also different in that I think Mark Cuban's good for the league. And I think that he's value add to the league. And I think that he tries to do the right thing with this franchise. Now, he had a Me Too thing in his organization that he deserves, you know, that he deserved to be scrutinized for. But I think that when you say on balance, has Cuban and the Mavericks done the right things and tried to do the right thing and been part of, you know, part of the solution in the NBA versus part of the problem? You'd say, yes, he has been. So, like, this is a business calculus, too. If the Redskins were a really successful franchise and Snyder was really important to generating revenue for the league and, you know, pushing the league forward, he wouldn't be in the trouble that he's in. He's driven his organization into the ground. But Dolan's a good one. I would like to think if anything ever hits the fan with Dolan, that the NBA owners would use that as – because that – talk about a franchise that has killed the league. How much stronger – and, you know, as strong as it is, but – you know, how much more powerful the NBA would be with a powerful Knicks franchise in there? And it's never going to happen as long as that little putz is in charge of that team.
Right. And also, like, you know, Washington was also one of the marquee, you know, jewels of the league and now isn't anymore. It's been, you know, 30 years, basically.
And if there's one thing that NFL owners care about, it's the health of every single franchise, right? What's good for the 32? I mean, you look at, managing to get the Rams moved out of St. Louis and getting back to Los Angeles. Why? Because that was good for Stan Kroenke. They wanted to take care of people on the inside. They care about the health of every single franchise. And if you have what used to be a premier franchise, one of the most important franchises in the league, major market city, big time football town, given the fact that they've been just a dumpster fire for the last 20 years, I guarantee you every other NFL owner cares about the health of that franchise as if it were their own, because they care about the health of all 32. That's one of the things that makes the NFL a really successful business.
And I'll tell you what, like Snyder, in terms of the heavy hitters in that league, I don't know if he's one of them. I mean, he had to bring in all those minority owners, and I don't know how leveraged he is. Bezos could buy that team with, like, that's pocket change for him, isn't it?
That's
like,
right.
I think he would pay in cash, right? Like, I mean, that would be nothing for him to buy that team. And I think most, I mean, taking everything else out, I just think Bezos would be a better owner. He couldn't be worse. I'll put it to you like that. Here's Mike and Rozzi on Cam Newton. Go ahead, Mike.
First of all, if you miss Cam Newton and Auburn, you missed a great show. Secondly, you guys were talking about his last games in Carolina, and I remember watching a few of them, and it was the most stagnant offense you'd ever seen. It was like McCaffrey left, McCaffrey right, McCaffrey over the middle, and it was just such a bad offense. And I don't know if that was a product of Cam Newton being cooked or if it was just a bad offense.
Okay, well, Murray would point to the offensive line, that the offensive line cooked him in his last seven losses, all of them by less than one score, 23 sacks, 10 interceptions, also a fumble, and he just got beat up. He got beat up because they couldn't protect him.
Yeah, and, you know, he talked in that YouTube video with those other players, you know, look, I put some bad film out there, so he owns that. Like, and there's times where he looked like a shell of himself, but it's not all him, those eight losses. Again, people, oh, at eight, his last eight games, he's done, he's cooked. And, yeah, he had those injuries. But, again, the ultimate team sport is football. That offensive line, it sucked there. Sucked. Seven losses decided by one score, six of those, at least three sacks in a game. I mean, there's some he's taken four sacks in, like, that's not just all on him because he's running around. Like, no, that offensive line with the Carolina Panthers was garbage. So you get him here and, you know, you get a better offensive line and they're healthy again. They play up to where they were at the end of 2018 when they win the Super Bowl, the Patriots. And he's got a better wide receiving corps. That's why one of the reasons I think it can work with Cam Newton.
John in the van on Newton. Go ahead, John.
Hey, so I'm not sure about the Panthers offense, but from what Murray says, the offensive line sucked. But what I know about the Patriots is they throw out a true piece of meat fullback. So I'm interested to see what the offense could look like in an I form with misdirection and play action with Cam back there.
So I want to see all that crap. To me, you know, turn them loose, run them, do all the fancy crap, all the fancy running crap, RPOs, you know, ball faking, blah, 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 blah. You know, we'll bring in Zoda X and O it for if you want. But I want to see all of that. I don't think there's any chance of it happening. But Cam Newton comes in here and runs the Tom Brady offense. You know, that makes no sense. You bring in Cam Newton to maximize his mobility and what he does for the running game, and let's see what we got.
And I know I get blood to death by you and Maz when he's here about the fullback, but I do think it actually does matter in this offense. I think they missed James Devlin last year, and this Dan Vitale they got from your Packers, Mike, I think can be big in this offense in terms of, you know, letting Cam Newton do what he needs to do and if the offensive line is healthy.
I was going to say, did I just pick up on an inconsistency in a Mike Felger take? Hated the fullback a few months ago, loves the fullback now?
No. I don't. You didn't hear me go off on the effing fullback. Did Newton use a fullback? Do those big running quarterbacks have fullbacks?
Mike Tolbert.
Yeah.
He was a big part of that offense, wasn't he?
Yeah, you know better than me. He was?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I don't know. And he probably, you know.
At least in that Super Bowl run, I think he was part of that team.
Come around to it, Mike. The fullback. Yeah, it's a great spot.
Give me the fullback.
By and large, we don't remember the last segment.
Felger and Maz.
I mean, I don't remember what I said last segment.
I don't remember what I said 60 seconds ago.
Felger and Maz.
You don't remember who we are or what we said last week.
Yeah, but Felger, I'm the highlight of your show.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Man, I got a call, and my agent hit me. I was, you know, no cap. I was working out. And he was like, hey, man, you know, we just got an interest from a team. I'm like, okay, cool, who? And he was like, New England. I said, hold on. How is me and Belichick going to mesh? You know what I'm saying?
Because that was the first thing I thought.
Because it's like perception. But it also, it's like this, too. It's like, okay, like, can we not? We have to talk about the elephant in the room. And it's like, you know you who you coming after. And I'm like, yeah, great.
Yeah.
What he was, what he is great. Needs no even talking about it. But one thing about it, though, you, Coach McDaniels, you able to call some stuff that you ain't never been able to call now. All right, you know, and I told, hey, you getting a dog? You getting one of these ticked off dogs too? That's like, bro. And I'm looking at the schedule. I'm like, who we play? That team passed on me. Okay, that team passed on me. They could have game and got me. They hollered at me. I even asked my agents, like, hey, yo, so what's up with? Nah, man, the agent act like he was like, well, we got to wait till it was just all type of you know, issues. So I'm like, bro, you know what? I'm gonna take this time with the COVID. I said, I'm going to commit to myself.
All right, welcome to Cam Newton and that Odell Beckham Interview. We're playing snippets of it today. It's agenda free. Everything from the week, and that was a big one from the week. Cam Newton talks there about Josh McDaniels now being able to call things he's never been able to call before. Are the Pats looking forward to that? Will they call those things? Do you want to see them do that? Michael in Dartmouth, your thoughts?
What's up, fellas? Two quick questions for you. For years, the Pats relied on tight ends as a major part of their offense. Cam Newton did a lot of the two tight end sets in Carolina as well, and their offense in Carolina really went through Olsen and McCaffrey. So my first question is, with only two rookie tight ends on the depth chart, do you think they'll still try to use the two tight end sets and play power football, or do you think they might spread it out and do more three wide receiver sets with Edelman, Sanu, and Harry?
Okay, I'd rather have the three wide receiver set. You don't have any tight ends. I know they just drafted a couple kids, but, I mean, they have, five tight ends on the roster. I'm not sure a single one of them can play. And
right, if it's the two from last year that we pretty much know can't play in Lacoste and Ryan Izzo, and then these two that they drafted, you mentioned Asiasi and Dalton Keene, which are big question marks, so who knows?
Who knows? I mean, I would play to the strength of the personnel. I mean, and that is, if my receivers are better than my tight ends, then it's receivers out there. If my tight ends are better than my then the tight ends are out there. And as it stands right now, I'm looking forward to seeing Mohamed Sanu come back. Feels like he's worked his ass off. I mean, talk about workout videos. His have been my favorite of all of these guys. I think some of the stuff he's done.
Right, even pre-Cam Newton, he's just like out running with anyone that will throw him a football. He looks like he's in great shape.
Oh my! And running those routes uphill, like I love the stuff that he was doing. Yeah. So, and you know, I liked him when he got here. I think he sort of fits my profile. He's not a take the top off the defense kind of guy. He's not a loudmouth, pain in the ass receiver. Get tough, goes over the middle, gets open, catches the ball. So I like Sanu.
Not last year.
And obviously, you know, he got hurt after that with that stupid punt return. But his first game was it 10 catches?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. Like I like the thought of him. N'Keal Harry's a first round pick, and Edelman's Edelman. I mean, I feel like that's a stronger group than those tight ends. Tom and Quincy on the Dan Snyder story. Go ahead, Tommy.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, this Dan Snyder situation, he's had a rough week. But I'll say this much. One, he's a horrendous businessman, obviously. He's a horrible owner. He's been a horrible owner since he took over that franchise. And believe me, don't get me wrong, I could not care less what happens to the Redskins team. I don't care. I can't stand him. He's kind of a despicable human in a lot of ways. You know, he's a typical scumbag, you know. But as far as the league wanting to, you know, like you were saying, maybe the owners want him out of here, he's back to business. How the hell is he able to pay his own private investigator to look into all these allegations? Wouldn't you think that Goodell would be like, okay, let's get someone, you know, not paid by you, you know, employed by you to investigate you? Why isn't someone being put in place as an impartial investigator to find out what the hell has actually gone on down there for two decades? I don't understand that part of it.
I'll tell you what, Tom, that's a good point.
Yeah, I'm with him 100% on this. So despite the fact, you know, again, I had my whole thing of like, okay, this thing that was bad that came up from the Post, I don't think it's enough to be an indictment on Snyder just to get him out on that one story. Just separately, any internal investigation is a compromised investigation. Like,
it's
no
crock.
No team should be the one to, I'm going to investigate this. Like, get the hell out of here. The NFL has to actually hire someone and do the investigation.
So true.
They've got a great history with that, though. Those always turn out well.
Well, I mean, either way, if the owners want Snyder out, they'll find a way to push him out. And they should, whether they investigate, Snyder investigates, there's enough data, you know, there's enough of a track record already on the record of how Daniel Snyder owns that team, operates that team, and what he has done to that team for them to act. They don't need to investigate himself, or they don't need to investigate him to know that he's bad for their brand, and it's probably time for him to go. Brian in Springfield waiting patiently on Cam Newton. Thanks for hanging on, Brian. What do you got?
Hey, how's it going there? Thanks for taking me, and I hope I won't take too much of your time. I wanted to say that we should be very thankful that we have Cam Newton because we're going to be champions for another 10 years or whatever. But the other thing I wanted to say is that Stidham, I like Stidham. I looked at his stats in college. He he had a steady progression as far as percent completion percentage, and he only threw for like barely seven yards. Every catch is by average of 7 yards. And in NFL, you know, he did play last year. People aren't aware of it that much. They don't talk about it, but...
Okay, Byron, I'm going to let you go.
Well, with Newton and Stidham, cheers to another 20 years of success, everyone.
Here we go.
Yeah, there we go.
It's all, so...
Seven nice. More coming your way.
Yeah. That's it. You know?
Might as well turn the transmitter off right now. Yeah. There's nothing else to talk about.
Hashtag first to 14.
McCarthy, do you like that Cam Newton's here?
Yeah. Listen, I, given where they were, sure, absolutely. I think you're not going to do any better on June 28th than Cam Newton. Still should be Tom Brady. Will I ever get over it? Probably not. But given where they were, sure, I think Newton's a decent option for this point in the summer. Yeah, I think it's exciting. It is.
Do you think it was a genius move by the Patriots? Like they manipulated the pieces of the chessboard and Bill Belichick wins again? Are you one of those guys?
No, because are they better or worse at quarterback than they were in March?
Oh, very good, McCarthy. Thank you.
Are they? Are they better or worse?
Oh, no. All right.
You
so,
tell me, Felger.
Do yourself a favor. Don't listen to the ESPN show in the morning. The most puke-inducing piece of sound from the week comes your way next in our long commercial-free segment.
Felger and Mads on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And streaming anywhere you go. Sports Hub app. You can listen to Felger and Mads on your phone with the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
Frankly, it's what we deserve. We're a nation of idiots.
Felger and Mads, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Patriots this year are paying Cam Newton and Brian Hoyer and Jared Stidham a combined $2.775 million. They have those three quarterbacks under contract for this season at a significantly lower number than the Dallas Cowboys are fighting to keep Dak Prescott for. And it shows you how the Patriots are adapting in a post-Tom Brady world now, diverting their resources to three different quarterbacks. May the best man win the job, and they can pay that quarterback going forward while the Dallas Cowboys are struggling to sign Dak Prescott long-term. He'll make $31.4 million this year. The Patriots will pay those three quarterbacks in base salary a combined $2.775 million.
It's really smart when you think about it. And Swagoo, that I guess that's one of the ways that you wind up winning all those championships is just play it smart. There's no risk, zero downside on Cam financially or practically any other way. And the reward is so high, Marcus, that it's almost impossible to calculate it.
There are just so many things wrong with that commentary. I hardly know where to begin. We did a couple different segments on it during the week, but again, it's agenda-free.
When facilitating goes wrong.
Oh, my God. There's just so many things. Like, this is why they're, you know, six-time champions. This is how they've won all those championships. What do you mean? Tom Brady has been one of the highest-paid quarterbacks in the league for 15, 16, 17 years. Maybe the first one they won, he wasn't the guy. But they still had one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league in Bledsoe. So they've been paying quarterbacks at the top of the market, maybe not number one, and Brady's been slightly underpaid, but it's not like he's been the 20th highest paid quarterback. He's always been in the top 3 to 5 for 15 years, and before that, Bledsoe was paid. So what you know, that's been Maz's point, and that's right. You know, my other thing is, how do you give credit to a GM who just sits there and picks up the last thing standing when everything else has been passed over? Like, all he did was wait for the quarterback that was going to take his $1 million. And we talked to several people who said if that was Andy Dalton, the last man standing, he would have gotten that contract. And if it was Marcus Mariota, the last man standing, the Patriots' veteran quarterback that they were going to bring in was going to make minimum salary with incentives. And that was it. That was always the plan. And whoever the last guy standing was going to get that contract. So it wasn't about Cam Newton. It was about the contract. So that's wrong. What else? Oh, the no risk thing. The no risk thing is asinine. What if Cam Newton isn't good? What if he's not good? What if he's not good and he doesn't work out? Now, you can cut him. There's no risk financially, but that doesn't mean there's not any risk to your team. What if you pick the wrong guy?
Oh, it'd be a fight. It's going to be, if you cut him, I firmly believe this, if you cut him without, you know, MRI photos and x-ray photos, and it's not injury related, it's going to be an S storm of epic proportions. I think just in terms of the PR and in the locker room, because guys are pumped he got signed here. So no risk. That's a bunch of crap.
Right. So they're inviting the whole off field thing, Murray. You're right. Like, you know, somehow the Patriots got blamed for the fact that Cam Newton got a bad contract. Like, you know.
Richard, oh, I know.
Sherman,
yeah.
Yeah. Richard Sherman immediately comes out and says, how can you pay this guy? That, you know, like he's blaming the Patriots when they were the ones who gave him the job. No one else even gave him a job. It's not the Patriots that deserves, you know, no one deserves criticism for that. You get paid what you're worth. You get paid what the market will bear. And Cam Newton had diminished so badly that's what he demanded, or that, you know, that wasn't in a vacuum. You know, he got what he earned. He got what he deserved. But, you know, be that as it may, if you cut him, you're inviting this whole, you know, this whole backlash, which you know is going to come. If they do, so that's a risk. There's a risk to internally. You've pumped up all those players on your team who still buy into the Cam Newton brand and are excited that Cam Newton is here. If you cut him for Jared Stidham, what does that do to you? I mean, there's all sorts of risks. So, like, I just, God, I despise that commentary.
Did you spit at your television when you saw that?
Oh,
the other
my
morning?
God. It's like, I mean, good God. It just the ball washing. I have a hard time with it. I don't know if you've noticed.
Well, the other thing too, you can now crap on them for, because we found it out at the end of the show, is that this franchise tag that number that Joe Tooney's going to apparently play under this year. I guess we didn't know this until we talked about it, like as the show was wrapping up. All the offensive linemen are under the same number. So, I mean, that really made no sense. You know, if you want to do that and give the close to $15 million to a franchise tackle, fine. It's a left tackle. You know, we're talking about a left tackle. If you had an Orlando Pace type, that guy's deserving that kind of money. But the number is the money because it's all the offensive linemen. So it's skewed. You know, that's a big number for a guy who's a guard. And that's why they're paying so much out the nose, because, you know, tackles are involved too. It's not separate. You know what I'm saying? Like on the offensive line, we found that out, and it's like, well, that's another, you know, bad personnel move ultimately.
Okay. Meanwhile, Agenda Free Friday, and a big thing this week, though, in the last couple of days this week, was the David Pastrnak story, and something we've hit on today. We have a development. Stu, I'd even hit the button. Might as well.
This is breaking sports news,
powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change
on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This from Pluto Shinzawa of The Athletic. David Pastrnak has tested negative for coronavirus. The reason for his absence at practice the last few days, he came into contact with someone who has coronavirus. This was apparently reported to Shinzawa, or told to Shinzawa, by Pastrnak's agent. No news on Andre Kasha, who's also been missing from Bruins practice for the last few days. So there you have it, Felger.
Okay, so Fluto writing in The Athletic, J.P. Barry, the agent for David Pastrnak, disclosed that his client is under quarantine after coming into contact with someone who tested positive for COVID-19. Pastrnak has tested negative, according to Barry. On Wednesday, Pastrnak was cleared to skate alongside 10 of his teammates for the first time since returning to Boston. The Bruins expected Pastrnak to practice with the team on Thursday. Plans changed that morning after the team learned of Pastrnak's contact. The right wing did not practice Thursday or Friday. The length of Pastrnak's quarantine and absence from the team is unknown. The Bruins leave for Toronto on July 26th. That is, help me out here, what's the date? The 17th?
Yes.
So
nine
that's a
days.
Week from Sunday. This has not changed my feeling on Pastrnak one bit. I'm still annoyed with him. I'm glad he's not. Believe me. The positive thing, that would have blown. Because mm-hmm. Now he's out 2 weeks, and, you know, that's a real setback. Hopefully this, you know, I don't know what the protocols are there. If you just come into contact with someone and you test negative, does that mean you're in the clear, or you still got to, you know,
like, no, I think you still got to wait that out a couple of weeks. I mean,
you got to wait.
You probably have to test negative a certain number of times, something
14?
Like that.
Do you have to wait 14 days and have 14 negative tests?
Not
or
sure.
What? I'm sure it's been reported somewhere. I'm sure it's, you know.
And I'm saying yes based on that's how it is with every other workplace in America right now. And I get it. Look, it's professional sports. It's a little bit different. But given that it's COVID, and I think we're all dealing with the same thing here, I don't see why they would make it different. Like, if you've been near someone, you should go the hell away for 2 weeks.
Okay. So, I mean, my point, I still say to David Pastrnak, what have you been doing?
Right.
Have you been careful? Have you been diligent? Have you put the interest of the team and getting back to play first? Or are you out screwing around? Or are you out being irresponsible? Or are you just being loose or sloppy or not taking care of you? I mean, again, everyone else on the team made it. Everyone else. Except for the one guy that if we said going into the thing, who are you most worried about? We all said Pastrnak, right?
Yep.
We all said, what is he going to do? How's he going to carry himself? Is he going to keep it clean? You know, so what? Everyone else figured it out. Everyone else figured it out except for you, and Kashe too, but I don't care about him like I do about David Pastrnak. Everyone figured it out but you. And to me, it doesn't change one bit. What are you doing? What are you doing exposing yourself? You can't keep it in your pants for a couple of months. And I just say that figuratively, and I'm not saying like he's up sleeping, or I'm not. I just mean you just can't go home. You just can't go home and keep a distance for a couple of months and win a cup and then freaking let it fly and smoke him if you got him, you know, and then go do your thing. So he still got himself in a situation where they had to shut him down. And that to me is frustrating. And he also, you know, he tested negative, but he also put the team at risk, right? Because if he was cleared to skate a couple days ago, then the players he was skating around were at risk.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the whole thing. It's like, do you want it or not? Do you get it or not? And I still ask those questions with David Pastrnak. But the good news is he's negative. Now we have to go dig in. I'm sure it's been reported. I'm sure it's out there. It's just in this, you know, in the minutia of it. Let me just read this paragraph. Pastrnak and Kashe were originally cleared to skate after fulfilling testing mandates following their return to Massachusetts. Under NHL rules, in conjunction with the Massachusetts Board of Health, Pastrnak and Kashe were required to either quarantine for 14 days or quarantine for 7 days and undergo real-time reverse transcription poly... What the F is this?
PCR test. That's
Thank
what it
you.
Is.
Jesus,
the PCR,
just
the
stick
say
the thing
that. Up your nose.
Okay, what I used to use to watch movies?
Under what?
VCR, PCR, boo, bad joke.
Oh, I don't do humor. And undergo real-time reverse transcription polymerase chain reaction. Jesus, what is that? It's the RT-PCR test on days 1, 3, 5, and 7. Nordstrom, who returned from Sweden, opted for the latter. All right, so do you get it? So you, when you come back to Massachusetts under NHL, you either have to quarantine for 14 or quarantine for 7, and on 4 of the 7 days, every other day, get that PCR test up your nose.
I think that's the intrusive one where they stick the long thing up your schnoz.
So it's unknown how Pastrnak, in particular, can train while quarantining. According to the NHL's return to play protocol, players who participate in phase 3 are not permitted to work out or skate at any public facility or other location. So for the time that he's quarantined, he can't even train, he can't even skate. Like, I'm still pissed at him. Like, I still think, you know, dude, what are you doing?
Right, I still think it comes down to a lack of personal responsibility. I can't think anything else.
It's to me that it changes the story not whatsoever, other than I'm glad he doesn't have it. And I think that's better. But if the quarantine regulations are the same, then what's the diff? He's out. He's off skates. He's off skates and he's out, and that's the same deal. So still got to figure that out. How long does he need to be quarantined for if he came into contact with someone but tested negative? Someone's got to find that out for me. All right. So more on that here in the update. There's 90 seconds. There's no commercials. We can pick that up on the other side. Final agenda-free hour of your wonderful phone calls coming your way right after this.